from deep inside your radio.
Yeah, here it is. It was a little dim, but it is here. Ladies and gentlemen, greetings once again from New Orleans, Louisiana. Whence we, where? Not whence. Where we just wrapped all photography on the big Uneasy documentary about why New Orleans flooded. Coming soon. No way of stopping it now. And speaking of me and my plan for world domination, world media domination, the right way, the Deaf Boys video coming soon. Ooh, that's going to be a sweet business. Ladies and gentlemen, this is New Orleans, where summer, normally threatening by this time of the year, has been postponed. The recrudescence of spring is being celebrated, and one can wonder whether it's utterly coincidental that it happens at the same time that a page is turned in the city's political history. But a tip of the Le Chapeau for consistency. You don't want somebody to suddenly turn all classy in the last minute. And so a tip of the Chapeau to former New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, who was on one of his last days in office, said to an interviewer at the friendly radio, the only friendly radio station that he had left in town, and when he was asked, "Well, what do you have any words for your critics?" His words were, "You can kiss my chocolate buttocks." You know, consistency. That's what I admire. You don't want to switcheroo. You don't want to, as the athletes say, be pulling a 360 on us. A sad note in the week's news. You may have seen the Nigerian president died earlier this week after a long lingering illness. The good news is he's left me a substantial inheritance, and I just need some assistance, ladies and gentlemen, in transferring the funds into this country. So if you'll just send me your banking details, you will be amply rewarded for your assistance. From the Chicago desk in exile, this note on no hard feelings. In the NBC store at 30 Rockefeller Plaza, New York City, they're still selling Conan O'Brien shirts. They're in the discounted area, but they're more than, well, they're triple the price of the America's Got Talent t-shirts, or shirts, which I guess are also discounted. Conan, $15, America's Got Talent, $4.95. Take your pick. No hard feelings when there's money to be made. And really, that's what it's all about. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from the digital wonderland.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
It really is amazing what's in store for us. The motion picture industry can block outputs on home television equipment to enable studios to offer first-run movies while preventing viewers from making copies, according to the FCC. Temporarily disabling your outputs will enable a new business model that wouldn't develop in the absence of such anti-piracy protection, the FCC said this week in an order. I got a new business model for you. Home viewing of recently released movies over cable and satellite systems would provide revenue for studios, which have seen DVD sales drop. No. Lucky they didn't give any more of those DVD revenues to writers and actors over the last 20 years, or they'd really be in trouble, huh? DVD sales have dropped as more people get films through the internet, mail order, and kiosk rental services. The FCC order will allow big firms for the first time to take control of a consumer's TV set or set-top box, blocking viewing of a TV program or motion picture, says the president of a Washington-based advocacy group, Public Knowledge. The Motion Picture Association of America asked the FCC way back in 2008 for a waiver from rules that would normally prohibit disabling video outputs. so that its members could send movies over cable and satellite services using secure and protected digital outputs, according to the petition by the trade group. This action is an important victory for consumers, says the MPAA, who will now have far greater access to see recent high-definition movies in their homes. Okay, it's good news for the consumers when they disable your outputs, says the motion picture industry, which, of course, is used to distributing fictional stories. And because you can never get too much formaldehyde in the news, clothes manufacturers should stop using potentially carcinogenic formaldehyde, a leading toxics expert has warned, after nurses given new uniforms in Great Britain found that they contained the chemical and reported side effects. Well, actually, they just reported side effects. They didn't know it had the chemical. Gwyn Lyons, until recently a member of the Government Advisory Committee on Hazardous Substances, said it was highly likely that scores of nurses in Wales, or scores of Wales and nurses for that matter, who last month reported severe skin rashes after starting to wear new uniforms, had had an allergic reaction to formaldehyde resin used to make the tunics crease-resistant. Well, what do you want? Skin problems or creases? Come on. Be sensible. One of the companies which supplies clothing to the British medical industry said the skin irritation affecting the nurses related to an isolated batch of fabric. Workers in the industry that manufactures the clothing are warned by the health and safety executive that can cause skin, eye, nose, and throat irritation. Long-term exposure to high levels has been linked with nasal and lung cancer and living in trailers. Dr. Lyons said it was likely the skin irritation was caused by formaldehyde, but she said there's also a bigger picture, and many experts consider that formaldehyde is a known human carcinogen when inhaled over time. Therefore, whenever possible, it's high time that safer substances were used instead of formaldehyde. Alternative uniforms are being made available to nurses in Wales. Wasn't the formaldehyde industry just a few months ago issued a press release saying, all right then. Beware of press releases. Hello, welcome to the show.
Motherly love, forget about the brotherly and otherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do. The mother's got love that'll drive you mad. They're raving about the way we do. No need to feel lonely, no need to feel sad. If we ever get a hold on you, what you need is motherly love.
Come on, get it now.
Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and otherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do. Nature's been good to this here band. Don't ever think we're shy. Send us up some little groupies and we'll take their hands and rock them till they sweat and cry. What you need is motherly love.
Get it now.
Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and otherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do. We can love you till you have a heart attack. You best believe that's true. We'll bite your neck and scratch your back till you don't know what to do. What you need is motherly love. Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and otherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do.
You know I got a little motherly love for you, babe. You know I got a little motherly love for you, honey. You know it doesn't bother me at all that you're only 18 years old, because I got a little buckly love for you, baby.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And I mentioned the wrapping of photography on the Big Uneasy. And to my New Orleans crew, thank you so much for your hard work. And to my Los Angeles crew, fly safely. Speaking of which, wow, that was too smooth. That's embarrassingly smooth. Tales of Airport Security. Writes this. Today, a cautionary tale, but deliberately so. Dear Harry. I'm a long-time I'm a TSO, a transportation security officer, at L.A. Airport. Many of the inbound flights are coming from other countries, where there are duty-free shops that sell liquor. This liquor must travel as carry-on baggage to LAX. It cannot be checked. However, many of our passengers need to change terminals once they enter the United States, requiring them to exit the secure area and re-enter a different secure area. At that point, my fellow TSOs and I have no choice but to confiscate the duty-free liquor or advise the passengers to place it in their checked baggage. But many of these passengers don't have the time to do so or the desire to pay the sometimes steep airline fees to check a now additional bag. My fellow TSOs and I feel bad about confiscating their items and have advised the duty-free shops many times to warn passengers about changing gates. But so far, they refuse to do so. Maybe your tales of airport security can help get the word out. P.S. I can't give you my name because I could be fired for writing to you. Tales, ladies and gentlemen. Tales, I say, of airport security. The copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Yes, it's Kafkaesque. You got a problem with that? You do know who Kafka was, right? Okay, somebody raised that question earlier this week. News of AFAC, a flawed military doctrine pursued by the West in Afghanistan, led to the Taliban nearly taking over Pakistan's tribal regions, according to the Pakistani Army. This is from a Indian newspaper, The Hindu. Either the U.S. Army lacked the capability or the willingness. This is making my job harder. It is like gas in a balloon. The moment you squeeze the militants on one side, they go to the other. Either we cross the border into Afghanistan or they, the Americans, clear it up. Whatever the West says, we, the Pakistanis, are the victims and not the source. It's from Colonel Nauman, who commands the Bajur Scouts, along with several other military officials, one from Inter-Services Intelligence. Oh, they're nice people. They helped start Al-Qaeda. They claim the Americans made a tactical error when they entered Afghanistan. They allied with the Northern Alliance and pushed toward the south, but they failed to block the rear, allowing the militants to escape across the border into Pakistan. We are forced to clear the mess, they said. Okay. That, I think, happened under a previous administration. I don't know. And news of the godly is the abuse scandal continues in the Catholic Church. keep in mind, because the Deaf Boys video is coming out soon. A Brazilian archbishop now speaks out. Speaking at a Brazilian bishops' conference, Archbishop Thaddeus Gringes, a conservative priest who has made controversial statements in the past, says society's woes are being reflected in the sex abuse scandal enveloping the church. Society today is pedophile. That's the problem. So people easily fall into it. And the fact that it's denounced is a good sign, says Archbishop Bishop Gringes. It's society. We're pedophiles. If we could just wall off the church from us, you see, I guess is the point. The comments come as the church is under fire. As you know, 3 weeks after Cardinal Tarcísio Bertone, the number two official of the Vatican, said at a news conference that the sex scandals were linked to homosexuality and not celibacy. Several cases of priests allegedly abusing children have surfaced in Brazil in recent months. Cases, not the priests. They haven't surfaced. Archbishop Gringes is the Archbishop of the Porto Alegre Diocese, one of the largest in Brazil, which has more Catholics than any other nation. He also is the Chancellor of the Catholic University of Rio Grande del Sul. He denounced the abuse within the church, but he said internal church punishment of the priests guilty of abuse was sufficient. The police shouldn't get involved. Quote, "For the church to go and accuse its own sons would be a little strange," he said. He said accuse. In case those of you listening missed the consonant there. The archbishop has made controversial comments in the past. In 2003, he argued that only 1 million Jews died in the Holocaust. A few years later, he recanted and said, yeah, it was 6 million. Last year, he outraged Jewish groups in Brazil by telling a magazine that, quote, "more Catholics than Jews died in the Holocaust, but this isn't known because the Jews control the world's media." Rupert, I'll see you in shul. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. And keeping an eye on our missile defense program, I feel safer just saying those words, don't you? The Air Force has halted purchases from a unit of L3 Communications Holdings, Incorporated. They supplied a faulty target that aborted a $41 million missile defense test. The Air Force says it will buy no more target missiles from Coleman Aerospace until it fixes the flaws that spoiled the test last December. "We all sat there and watched the target fall into the water," says the Missile Defense Agency Executive Director David Altweg. "The target had a big-time quality problem." It's the target that we're shooting the interceptor at. Can't even make the target right, ladies and gentlemen. You see what I'm saying? The Air Force Space Missile Systems Center said it informed Coleman of its decision and spelled out corrective actions that are required to be completed on schedule before Coleman will be considered for future target contracts. Coleman submitted an action plan last month and is proactively correcting all issues and has initiated robust training protocols along with significant new oversights. Asked why the lapses occurred, Jennifer Barton, spokeswoman for the New York City-based company that owns Coleman, said, quote, "outside experts concluded that overconfidence along with a relaxation of engineering and manufacturing discipline resulted in lax processes and procedure adherence." Ain't that the truth, baby? Don't that happen all the time, everywhere? Overconfidence. Hello, BP. How's that containment thing working out for you? Oh, that sounded like Sarah Palin. Sorry about that. Anyway, how's that containy thing? That would be Sarah Palin. Anyway, we can't even make the targets work, ladies and gentlemen, for the tests in which the missile defense interceptors would shoot down the targets to show that they work. Yes. I still feel safer. Sure. Why not? Why the heck not? But for more overconfidence, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Trees and other plants help keep the planet cool. The rising levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere are turning down the global air conditioner. According to a new study by researchers at the Carnegie Institution for Science, in some regions, more than a quarter of the warming from increased carbon dioxide is due to its direct impact on vegetation. Huh? This warming is in addition to the greenhouse effect. The study underscores the importance of including plants in the climate models of climate scientists. Plants have a very complex and diverse influence on the climate system, says study co-author Ken Caldera. Plants take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, but they also have other effects, such as changing the amount of evaporation from the land. It's impossible to make good climate predictions without taking all these factors into account. Plants give off water through tiny pores in their leaves, a process called evapotranspiration that cools the plant just as perspiration cools our bodies. On a hot day, a tree can release tens of gallons of water into the air. That's acting as a natural air conditioner for its surroundings. The plants absorb carbon dioxide for photosynthesis through the same pores. But when carbon dioxide levels are high, the leaf pores shrink, causing less water to be released, diminishing the plant or the tree's cooling power. So there you go. This is going to be published or being published in the May 3 to 7 online edition of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The study shows the kind of vegetation that's on the surface of the planet and what the vegetation is doing is very important in determining our climate, said the researchers. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now it's new. It's not new. Well, it is new. Newish, clean, safe, cheap, too new to meter. Wait till you meter. State and federal inspectors are searching for the cause of a leak of radioactive water into catch basins at New Jersey's Salem 2 nuclear power plant at Lower Alloways Creek. It's not the only nuclear plant problem to face the inspectors in New Jersey this week. Soon after making the Salem 2 problem public, the State Department of Environmental Protection announced it had been notified by Exelon, owner of Oyster Creek Nuclear Station in Ocean County, that a monitor that measures radiation emissions from this facility is inoperable. It's unknown how long the monitor has been out of service. But there couldn't be emitting any. Why would you need a PSEG Nuclear, which operates the Salem 2 plant, said it has identified elevated levels of tritium at two catch basins. We have been advised, says the Department of Environmental Protection Commissioner, that there is no immediate threat to public health and safety. Notice the telltale adjective, ladies and gentlemen. Spot the telltale adjective. Immediate. But, you know, wait a few days. We will work closely with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the plant's operator to take every appropriate step to protect public health and the environment, he said. The company described the tritium leak as 1.1 million picocuries per liter in each of the two basins. Tritium is a mildly radioactive type of hydrogen produced during the operation of nuclear plants. It has turned up at several of the nation's nuclear reactors in recent years as the result of system leaks. We are very concerned and are working closely with the public safety. PSEG is the operator of the unit, said the Commissioner of Environmental Protection in New Jersey. We are very concerned. Why would he be very concerned if there's no immediate... Oh, I see. Regarding the monitor that's not monitoring, officials say while it is a critical monitor for evaluation of off-site consequences in an emergency, the slack monitor is not the only means of identifying elevated radiation. They say there are other monitors throughout the plant, and they haven't been asked whether those are operating. So we'll find out, I guess. And on a related point, oh, and there's more news of the warm. I'll get to that in a moment. But Dateline New Delhi, a controversial bill. Guess what I'm thinking about? A controversial bill to establish a compensation system for nuclear accidents in India, a key step toward allowing American companies to set up reactors in India to comply with our new nuke deal with India that's ticking Pakistan off. This bill was introduced in India's parliament this week. Opposition lawmakers accused the government of favoring U.S. and business interests over the rights of the Indian people. Why would that be? Opponents chanted shame, shame, as India's Minister of Defense and Science and Technology introduced the bill. The bill takes away the right of victims to bring compensation claims to court in the event of a nuclear disaster. When could that possibly happen? A nuclear disaster. The bill seeks to place the burden of damages solely on the nuclear plant operator, not on suppliers of equipment. The legislation has been a subject of heated debate among Indians for months because it revives troubling memories of compensation battles in the Bhopal disaster, the poisonous gas leak. So, yes, seeking to cap compensation claims in case of a nuclear disaster is essential to running nuclear stuff in India, as if there were a danger. But it's clean, it's cheap, it's safe. It's too safe to have compensation claims. And, yes, I did leave out one item of news of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, but we catch up right here. The ice cap on Uganda's highest peak has split because of global warming, according to Uganda's Wildlife Authority. The glacier is located at an altitude of 16,000-plus feet in the Rwenzori mountain range near the border with Congo. The authorities say a crevasse has blocked access to the summit, the third-highest peak in Africa. Scientists say glaciers in the range could disappear within 20 years. Officials said a team had been sent to the mountain to assess the extent of the damage. According to researchers, the ice cap covered 2 square miles 50 years ago. It's now less than 1 square mile. The mountain range, which is one of the few places near the equator to have glaciers, was declared a World Heritage Site in 1994. But, you know, it's just heritage. We'll be right back. is Jacob Marley? Who is Jacob Marley? Who is Jacob? Oh, sorry. Just second thoughts. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show Now. News from outside the bubble. Who is Jacob Marley? Who is Jacob Marley? From Agence France-Presse, s'il vous plaît. Increasing rates of obesity among young Americans could undermine the future of the U.S. military, with potential recruits increasingly too fat to serve, according to two retired generals. Obesity rates threaten the overall health of America and the future strength of our military. Generals John Shalikashvili and Hugh Shelton, former chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, wrote in the Washington Post. Oh, I didn't read it there. It's kind of in the bubble. Obesity disqualified more potential recruits from military service than any other medical factor, they say. We consider this problem so serious from a national security perspective, we have joined more than 120 other retired generals, admirals, and senior military leaders in calling on Congress to pass new child nutrition legislation. The commanders are part of a new nonprofit group called Mission Readiness. The warning came amid growing concern that childhood obesity has turned into an epidemic affecting a staggering 1 in 3 American youngsters. Well, if they're staggering, it is serious. The U.S. military also faces a problem with troops already serving who are overweight, with some soldiers losing out on promotions because of their failure to meet fitness standards. The retired generals endorsed a plan by President Obama to increase funding by $1 billion a year over 10 years for child nutrition programs. U.S. is already spending $75 billion a year on medical costs associated with obesity, say the generals. Citing figures from the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, they say the proportion of potential recruits who flunked their physical tests because they were overweight has jumped nearly 70% since 1995. The only thing in this story that's jumped. Certainly not the recruits. General Shalikashvili, who led the Joint Chiefs from 93 to 97, and General Shelton, who held the same post from 97 to 2001, cited school lunch legislation passed in 1946 as a model. Military leaders at the time recognized poor nutrition reduced the pool of qualified candidates for the armed forces, they said. We must act, as we did after World War II, to ensure that our children can one day defend our country, if need be, said the generals. In the meantime, as they say, we're too fat to fight.
Well, when it comes down to truculence, the truck don't stop here. I'll cuss out the bad guys at the drop of a beer. I'll talk up America till dawn's early light. Too bad that I'm too fat to fight. I joined up with the army on some kind of dare, but traveling on my stomach, it made people stare. Couldn't fit in my bunk, my camo was too tight. Turns out I was too fat to fight. That's right. Too fat to fight, and ain't it a shame? 'Cause war is really America's game. Got bellicose brains, but our varicose veins mirror all too fat to fight. We're all too fat to fight. That's right. Now the burgers and the fries, the cokes and ice cream, I thought I was eating the American dream. But when my boots disappeared clean out of my sight, I could see I was too fat to fight. Now shooting and parachuting clean out of a plane, it's not just a job, it's a terrible strain. The few and the proud will carry our might. Rest of us are too fat to fight. That's right. Too fat to fight, and it does seem a waste. But building up nations just ain't to our taste. Got bellicose brains, but our varicose veins mean we're all too fat to fight. Well, we picked a bad time to get off the pot. An army of one, maybe all that we got. The bad guys are fast, they're smart, and they're light. God made us too fat to fight. Now one of these days, my son will enlist. I'll be hiding my tears, by his mom he'll be kissed. He'll waddle on that drill field and be home by night. Like his dad, he'll be too fat to fight. Too fat to fight, and ain't it a shame? 'Cause war is really America's game. We got bellicose brains, but our varicose veins mean we're all too fat to fight. Yes, we're all too fat to fight.
And I was in the band.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Apologies for that dead air, first of all. And now, in case you're wondering why Gordon Brown soon will not be the British Prime Minister anymore, here's his apology from last week that sort of sealed his fate.
A microphone picked you up saying that was a very bigoted woman. Is that what you said?
I apologize if I've said anything like that. What I think she was raising with me was an issue about immigration and saying that there were too many people from Eastern Europe in the country. And I do apologize if I've said anything that has been hurtful, and I will apologize to her personally.
Someone has just handed me the tape. Let's play it and see if we can hear it.
She'd never have put me with that woman. Whose idea was that?
I don't know. I
didn't
see.
That's Sue, I think. That's just ridiculous.
They'll go with that one.
They will go with it.
What did she say?
Oh, everything. She's just this sort of bigoted woman. Said she used to be a lady. I mean,
that is what you said. She not allowed to express her view to you?
Of course she's allowed to express her view, and I was saying that. The problem was that I was dealing with a question that she raised about immigration, and I wasn't given a chance to answer it because we had a whole melee of press around her. But, of course, I apologise if I've said anything that has been offensive, and I would never put myself in a position where I would want to say anything like that about a woman I met. It was a question about immigration that really, I think, was annoying.
And you're blaming a member of your staff there, Sue?
No, I'm blaming myself, and I blame myself for what is done. But you've got to remember that this was me being helpful to the broadcasters with my microphone on, rushing into the car because I had to get to another appointment, and they have chosen to play my private conversation with the person who was in the car with me. I know these things can happen. I apologise profusely to the lady concerned. I don't think she is that. I think it was just the view that she expressed that I was worried about that I couldn't respond to.
Enough said. Although probably not enough to get reelected. Talk show host Ellen DeGeneres has become the latest casualty of the hypervigilant image police at Apple headquarters. DeGeneres apologized this week on the air for a spoof iPhone commercial that she ran on her talk show, poking fun at her inability to send text messages from an iPhone. The spoof did not impress Apple when it aired this week, and she had since been contacted by the company. The people at Apple didn't think it was so funny, she said. They thought I made it look like it's hard to use, and I just want to say I'm sorry if I made it look like the iPhone was hard to use. It's two apology ifs in a row here. Everybody at Apple, Steve Jobs, Mr. Macintosh, I apologize. I'm sorry, she said. Mr. Macintosh. In a news conference Friday night, a tearful Seattle Police Department detective, Shandy Cobain, apologized for his language to a suspect caught in a widely circulated video aired publicly this week. Shot around 2 a.m. on April 17th, the video shows a group of officers detaining three men who are lying on a sidewalk. One of the men moves a hand to his face. It appears Cobain is trying to stop the movement with his boot, ends up kicking the man's head. He is heard saying, "I'm going to beat the expletive Mexican piss out of you, homie. You feel me?" Quote, "I know my words cut deep and were very hurtful. I'm truly, truly sorry," Cobain told the assembled media. He said as a 16-year veteran of the Seattle Police Department, he had no time envisioned he would, quote, "do anything to bring such notoriety to my department. Sadly, I did." His words that night, he said, were offensive and unprofessional, embarrassed himself and his colleagues. He offered apologies to his colleagues, to the Latin community, and to Seattle. Deadline Morgan Hill, California? Yes. The controversy over a group of Live Oak High School students who wore clothing adorned with the American flag on Cinco de Mayo and were sent home was addressed by the school district superintendent. Wesley Smith released a letter of apology from the school's principal, who admitted he may have acted too hastily in sending the students home. He said this principal's decision was based solely on trying to maintain a peaceful campus. "It's important to understand," says Smith, "the situation was never about whether or not our students can wear patriotic clothing. They can." By the way, didn't it used to be illegal to wear the American flag as a shirt? When did that change? I miss that. I try to keep up. Continental Airlines CEO Jeff Smicek has apologized for calling U.S. Airways the ugly girl of the U.S. airline industry. Smicek made the comment on a conference call discussing his airline's just-announced merger with United Airlines. Talk about ugly. Noting that United first courted U.S. Air as a merger partner, but then reversed course and ended up with Continental, Smicek said, "I recognize that United is the best possible partner for Continental. I didn't want United to marry the ugly girl. I wanted the CEO of United to marry the pretty one, and I'm much prettier," unquote. The ugly comment. It seemed only a matter of time before the incident percolated to U.S. Airways management. Tuesday, U.S. Airways sent out a letter to its employees in which CEO Doug Parker said the ugly girl was a clear reference to U.S. Airways. Like many of you found this comment both chauvinistic and offensive to the hardworking people of U.S. Airways. I think ugly girls deserve the apology. Me, personally, frankly, just talking for me here on the radio, a call by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for community organizations to step in to help wounded war veterans make the transition to civilian life has drawn complaints from a major veterans organization and an apology from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. There's nothing wrong with asking community-based groups to help, but the primary responsibility for wounded warriors rests with the federal government, says the executive director of the Disabled American Veterans. So, Admiral Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chief, says he's sorry for what he called a poor choice of words. The point I was trying to make, he says, perhaps not too eloquently, is that the scope of the needs confronting our troops and their families is too great and too deep to be met only through the bureaucracy. Yes, the government must provide our veterans with educational opportunities, employment assistance, and quality health care, but we must also recognize there are some needs best delivered and best administered at the local level. Deadline Oakland, California, in the wake of a firestorm of controversy ignited by the weekend shooting of a deer that wandered into an East Oakland neighborhood by police officers. Oakland police this week apologized to the public for the incident. The department said it would rethink the way officers handle wild animals that stray onto city streets. Elizabeth Hasselbeck has apologized to Erin Andrews publicly and privately for comments she made Tuesday about Andrews' choice of attire on Dancing with the Stars. Speaking tearfully on The View television program, Hasselbeck said she regretted the remarks in which she said Andrews' convicted stalker, who filmed her through a hotel room peephole, could have avoided prison and seen almost as much just by watching the hit dancing competition. Hasselbeck said she left work Tuesday feeling bad about the comments and opened up to her 5-year-old daughter at home. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company apologized after James Glassman, a senior economist at the bank, said members of the Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigation showed ignorance of market economics. The report is from a single economist and does not reflect the view of our firm, said a spokeswoman for the J.P. Morgan Chase. We disagree with his characterizations, and we're sorry. A lawyer representing 17-year-old Stephen Consalve, who was tasered by police this week after running onto the field at Philadelphia's Citizens Bank Park, I guess that's the new name for a ballpark, says the teen and his family have expressed regret for the incident. Attorney Stephen O'Mara says Consalve knows he committed a foolish act and is truly sorry. He says the family hopes that people understand teenagers do impulsive things. Really? You think? Full-body scanning machines may reveal a little too much. If an incident at workplace violence this week among TSA screeners is any indication, a TSA worker at Miami International Airport was arrested for allegedly assaulting a coworker who had repeatedly teased him, not tased him, about the size of his genitals. The insult stemmed from an X-ray of the accused captured during a training exercise. Where's the apology? Oh, yeah, well, the witness heard the person say, "Get on your knees or I'll kill you and you better apologize." So he apologized. Ku Klux Klan leader Raymond Chuck Foster, who went on trial this week for the second-degree murder of a Klan recruit, pleaded guilty as charged and apologized to the victim's mother. "I so desperately wish I could redo the whole thing," he said. A weekly New York newspaper has apologized for a photo depicting President Obama and his wife as characters from the TV sitcom Sanford and Son. Smithtown Messenger publisher Philip Ciarello said in an editorial it was not the Long Island paper's intent to offend anyone. He said the photo was meant as political satire, but he said the paper was mindful the satire seemed to some in poor taste. The head of the Mounties in the Yukon has publicly apologized for the insensitive and callous treatment of a sick man who died in Whitehorse Mountie custody. Five officers are now being investigated for their treatment of Raymond Silver Fox. He died after reportedly vomiting 26 times during 13 hours in a White Horse drunk tank. Apparently, staff laughed at him as he languished in his own stuff, according to reports. And that is the Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen. Those are the Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, before that, should say, this week, of course, you may have noticed the stock market plunged by a big amount on Thursday, spiked back. There are investigations being undergone right now to determine if there was a foul play fooling around with the incident, or if the recovery from the plunge might just be, in Wall Street parlance, as memorialized on the current CD Greed and Fear, just a dead cat bounce.
Things were getting depressing, hard to shake free of our cares. Couldn't buy my car on credit, baby was selling her shares. Guys in suits were on my TV meeting just to say they'd met. Then just when it seemed the darkest, here comes the best news yet. They were doing a dead cat bounce, just watching the big bulls pounce. When only one day counts, that's when you do the dead cat bounce. You know, 2 days later we were sliding right back into the hole. Red arrows pointing downward, warnings blacker than coal. Baby was pruning her Christmas list. eBay had my guitar. Sure didn't feel like dancing till we heard this noise from afar. They were doing the dead cat bounce, stocks rising obscene amounts. Only in my dream account could we do the dead cat bounce. One day wonders and shooting stars, instant karma and mini bars. Now it's here, now it's gone. Only thing growing is my neighbor's lawn. I'm scuffling for groceries, babies hooking for rent. The checks they say were in the mail, but the mail was never sent. You can bounce a dead cat forever, but it's only gonna go up once. Everybody's a genius till everybody's a dunce. They were doing the dead cat bounce, sipping deep from fantasy's founts. They were buying hope by the ounce. They were doing the dead cat bounce. Let's all do the dead cat bounce. Sad reality, we'll all trounce. Even while the misery mounts, we'll be doing the dead cat. The dead cat. The dead cat bounce.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.4 and 5 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet. Think of that. Two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at Audible.com/theshow. And is available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And be just like not having to kiss Ray Nagin's chocolate buttocks if you'd agree to join with me then. All right? Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM New Orleans for doing whatever she does. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of music heard here on just part of the festivities at harryshearer.com. The show is on Twitter, at LeTwits. Help me reach 9,000 this week, won't you? Followers, that is. Who is Jacob Marley? Who is Jacob Marley? The show comes to you for Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Who is Jacob Marley?